Hey, wake up. New drinks just dropped at Wendy's. Cold foam, cold brew coffee, and sparkling energy. Both the caramel and the chocolate cold foam are just, ugh, so good. And the pineapple citrus and cherry limeade sparkling energy each have
80 to 120 milligrams, whew,
of added caffeine. So whether you need a treat first thing or to just stop yawning already, mornings hit different. To pick up a new pick-me-up, gotta be Wendy's. At participating U.S. Wendy's.
Ever wondered how a book gets made into a movie?
Or how to master the art of cooking?
Either way, we've got you covered with the Two Guys from Hollywood podcast. I'm Alan Nevins, a literary agent and talent manager.
And I'm Joey Santos, a columnist and celebrity chef.
On our podcast, we're going to be serving you a fresh perspective of the entertainment industry alongside our favorite celebrity guests.
As we like to say, we don't dish, we serve.
Listen and follow Two Guys from Hollywood on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to podcasts. We'll talk at you soon.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Sports Grid Fantasy Football Podcast. My name is Davis Maddock. I'm joined by Pat Corain today. We're going to do a little bit of rookie wide receiver chat, not just rookie wide receivers, but like kind of what to do with them in fantasy football this year, because I think some of them are going to be holds if we don't see anything, you know, that early on. I think some of them are going to be cuts. I think some of them, you know, maybe we'll be planning on re-adding. But I think that rookies are really going to determine a lot of what happens in fantasy football this year. Pat, are you kind of the same mind?
Yeah, it's going to be an incredibly interesting year for rookies because I think people don't really know if they can count on anything from a lot of these guys. I think you're getting some discounts, some really nice discounts on some rookies, but some rookies are getting hyped up and pushed up boards. So it's a little all over the place in terms of how the market is valuing these guys. I think there are some guys where there's still a nice discount available. So it's just going to be tough because I think in a normal year, you know, we would be already having preseason games and we'd get a better sense of where these guys are in the pecking order and everything. So it is just frankly hard to know which of these guys are going to have roles right away. And so it's just going to be a bit of a more of a scramble, I think, early in the season.
Yeah. So first guy, right? Well, first off, actually, this is a great question. Which rookie do you expect to score the most fantasy points? Which rookie wide receiver?
I think at this point, I would say Rager.
So you think it's Rager and you think Rager over Lamb, huh?
Yeah, I do, just because of targets. And I feel like if I'm wrong about that, I don't think Lamb is going to burn me this year with a season that is just kind of off the charts because there's just too much competition. Now, Lamb has been awesome in camp. The reports out of camp are just glowing on him.
Yes.
And so I don't want to discount his ability to contribute right away because I do think that he can. And so from a dynasty perspective, I think all the bullish, you know, if you were bullish on Lamb before, you should maybe be even more bullish than you were. But from a redraft perspective, I just think that the ceiling in terms of targets for Rager is so much higher than what Lamb can really achieve given the competition.
So for me, I was bullish on Lamb already, right? So I had Lamb ranked ahead of Judy as like long-term dynasty. Like I took him over Judy in several dynasty leagues. You know, I traded up for Lamb. I know Sean Siegel, who we all love and basically kind of hang on his every word, also, really sweats CeeDee Lamb. And everything that I have heard has basically kind of brought me to this perspective on the situation, which was I thought Lamb was great. I thought he was going to be great. I thought he landed in an optimal situation with a play caller that we really respect in Kellen Moore, a quarterback that we all like in Dak Prescott, an offense that led the NFL in yards per play last year. Like we have zero systemic concerns about Dallas. And, you know, yes, he's the third wide receiver, but I actually think the targets argument kind of fails because, you know, we know in Philadelphia, Zach Ertz is going to lead that team in targets. We know that they're going to play a lot of 12 personnel, and Dallas Goedert is going to run a lot of routes. We know that they throw to Miles Sanders and Boston Scott a lot. We know that DeSean Jackson is going to earn, you know, a few deep targets and some, you know, kind of trickeration, not tricky stuff, but, you know, slants and bubble screens and stuff like that. And by the way, in this same article, this Jimmy Kemsky piece that our buddy Pat Thorman retweeted this morning, he was also noting, I need to put it out there, J.J. Arcega-Whiteside is getting some good reviews from training camp. So I think you're probably right that Rager sees, what do we think, 15 more targets than Lamb probably. But I'm expecting the Lamb targets to all be, like, very good targets.
Yeah, I think that Lamb, if you just want to make, like, a straight bet of who ends up scoring more points, then you should probably put it on Lamb. But I think that, like, if you factor in the upside, then you should bet on Rager, because I do think, you know, you say we know Zach Ertz is going to lead the team in targets. I don't think that's a lock if Rager is like
a true
awesome
breakout.
Right away. Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, Ertz was not efficient last year. Goddard is.
I mean, he's literally never been efficient, though.
Yeah. Right.
He is a cat. Well, okay. So he's not efficient in how you and I define efficiency, which is like creating value on a per touch basis. He is efficient in how NFL coaches think about it, which is that he secures targets pretty much universally when he is targeted. Like, he is very good at converting targets into positive yardage, which is how NFL coaches tend to think about things.
That's fair. But you look at Rager, like Jimmy Kemsky's talking already saying he thinks he's going to lead the wide receivers in targets.
Yes.
So,
I think is probably true.
Right. I do too. And if he, while doing that, is performing efficiently, being used all over the field, being used deep, being used on screens, being used in the middle area of the field, which is what's happening in camp, then I think there's upside there for him actually to just become the alpha in the offense, where, you know, Lamb just doesn't have that as an option this year. So that's why I'm kind of leaning towards Rager, because you have that case where he just blows up year one, breaks out, is kind of the star of this rookie class, and is scoring like 16, 17 points a game. I have a hard time seeing Lamb get there.
So my pushback to that would be, I agree with your theory that Rager has the better ability to just outright win those targets, but I mean, does any wide receiver other than Mecole Hardman have better contingent value than CeeDee Lamb? Like, let's say in week 8, Amari Cooper has like a foot sprain or something, and all of a sudden we're talking like, okay, so Gallup goes to 9.5 targets a game and Lamb goes to like 8 targets a game, or both of those guys get dinged up, or Blake Jarwin gets dinged up, or I mean, imagine if Ezekiel Elliott gets injured, that they might just pass 45 times a game or whatever. And I think in all of those scenarios, Lamb becomes like a giant winner. So I think that what's become apparent is we have a tier of themselves for rookie wide receivers, that Lamb and Rager are a tier on their own at the top of these rookie wide receivers. And I think that, so it, corresponding to that, I think that those guys are not cuts at all. I think regardless of, you know, small injury at the beginning of the season, they don't start as hot as we want. Like, I'm not looking to cut CeeDee Lamb for Rex Burkhead in week 4. It's kind of basically what I'm saying.
Yeah, 100% agree. And I think your point about the contingent value with Lamb is strong. Like, if Cooper went down for 3 weeks, I think we'd be more bullish on Lamb for those 3 weeks than we are for Rager for those 3 weeks. You know,
well, just for because we don't actually expect Rager to have that, like, we don't expect Rager to have that much contingent value, probably. Like, I mean, he would gain some if Ertz were to be injured, but I don't think it's like a you know, like a CSU Ram rocket ship tweet. You know, like, I think he probably earns a couple more targets a game, but doesn't become, doesn't become like some crazy 13 target a game player. I mean, maybe he does, but that wouldn't be my median expectation.
Agreed.
So a guy that I see other people take a lot in drafts, and I see other people, you know, kind of chat positively about, is Justin Jefferson. And I got to say, we have done a lot of drafts. We have talked about fantasy football a ton this offseason. I don't remember ever seriously considering taking Justin Jefferson ever in a draft.
I've taken him in Dynasty. I mean, I think he's a pretty interesting prospect there. Yeah. I have considered – I think I took him in an underdog draft where I also had Dalvin Cook.
And,
I ultimately
and
didn't – I didn't go or with no. Cousins. No, I used just like – I think I take Murray a lot, so I probably went like Murray, maybe Wentz, and then I didn't come back for a third quarterback, but I still wanted to get multiple pieces of the same offense. So I took Jefferson with Cook. But that's – I'm not really taking Jefferson a lot either. It sounds like he's not having the best camp. Not a terrible camp, but he hasn't really stood out. He's looked like a rookie, they're saying. You know, there's stuff like Tajay Sharpe and BC Johnson are getting plenty of run.
Weird signings to make when you spend a first round pick on a wide receiver, right? Olabisi Johnson. Well, I guess Olabisi, but Tajay Sharpe, weird signing to make when you already have those guys. I mean, BC Johnson was a starting wide receiver on a playoff team last year.
Yeah. So, and then Irv Smith is the guy that sounds like he's maybe earning more targets. So I don't know. I think it's tough to get, you know, more hyped about Jefferson based on these training camp reports, but maybe, you know, maybe this is silly season where we just need to go back to our priors of this guy being a strong prospect and a first round pick and assume he'll have a value. Because if he's getting like a huge discount, then I think that probably should just kind of blindly invest based on what we know about him as a prospect and the available targets with Diggs gone. So I don't know. I think where does he become interesting to you? Like
I think
like at that point,
I think the issue with him is that he goes before Chenault, and
yeah,
why would I ever take him over Chenault when I think Chenault has both the better upside and the better floor? Like, I think Chenault has a better chance of being a guy you can start in week three and a better guy and, like, you know, a better chance of finishing like wide receiver 16 or something. Like, I think he is better in both of those than Justin Jefferson is.
Yeah, I think that's probably right. Although I do think there's some, particularly in like PPR, in, you know, on the DraftKings best ball, then I think Jefferson's a little bit more interesting because he could have some of those weeks where, you know, he just gets a bunch of catches.
Right, like seven catches for 55 yards or whatever.
Yeah, and I think Chenault, a lot of the reason that we're so enamored with him is that you can see him actually being pretty involved as a you know, short area rusher. Pass catcher, but also as a rusher. Yeah, get those touchdowns. I think his touchdown equity is a lot higher.
So this is totally an aside, but – well, kind of relevant to this conversation since we barely saw N'Keal Harry play last year. I went back and watched all of his touches from 2019. They used him as a rusher a ton, like a lot, like way more than I remembered. Like, do you remember this happening?
Last year?
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, he was involved like not all that much to begin with, right? I mean, how many rushes did he have?
So I think that he had 8 rushing attempts. I'm looking it up right now. He had 5 rushing attempts, but they were all like high leverage situations, if that makes sense. Like a 4th-and-1 and like down in like, I think like a 2nd-and-12 in their own 20 and stuff, like just, but really it was like an effort to like manufacture touches in a way that I did not expect at all. Like when I wanted to go watch N'Keal Harry touches as a rookie, I just did not expect to see him used that way. Like the Patriots trying to get him the ball, but, and he looks pretty good doing it too, by the way.
Yeah. And I think that's bullish because clearly he did not have a connection with Brady. So they're trying, you know, to manufacture touches, as you say, which, you know, shows they want this guy involved in the offense, even if he was having some struggles getting on the same page in the passing game. And obviously he started the year on IR. So I think there's, you know, the potential that his year was really ruined due to injury. But the thing with Harry, like I have a lot of Harry already.
Yeah.
And I'm starting to cool off on including him on, you know, my best ball drafts going forward, because the reports out of camp for him
are they not good?
They're not good. There was a whole thing of, like, at one point he was in practice and he was, like, so winded, and they, like, went back out there and everyone thought Harry was going to join them and he just didn't. And it's like, he just doesn't seem to be impressing people. So I don't know. You know, you have to take all this stuff with a lot of grains of salt, but he's one of the guys that I think we most want to see a strong training camp from, given what we saw last year. So it's just disappointing that we're not seeing that right now. And we're also seeing Cam Newton look awesome. So it's like, you know, it's like you're halfway there. Cam Newton's looking great. You want to see him have this connection with Harry and Harry have this awesome breakout with the new quarterback, but Harry so far doesn't seem to be living up to that.
Yeah. So I think that my take on that situation would be, I'm less worried in the case of Harry individually, because I don't really see what option they have in terms of not playing him. You know what I mean? Like, I really don't see a way that they get away from playing him a full complement of snaps. And if it doesn't work out, like if he's not efficient when targeted, you know, I think that I will reconsider things then. But it's not like it's a situation where they're going to be like, all right, Demir Byrd, you're the man now, dog. Like, I think that N'Keal Harry is going to be 80% of the snaps from week one, and we'll see what happens from that point.
Yeah, it's funny you say that, because Bird's the guy that went in for him when he was winded. But,
oh yeah, I mean, I assume that's his backup, like positionally or whatever.
Yeah, it sounds like Edelman has the best connection right now, and Sanu, I think, could, you know, the thing that's concerning to me is that they might not be like, Cam Newton could have an awesome year, but also not support multiple
any
weapons.
Good fantasy wide receivers.
Yeah. So if there's enough, like from Edelman and Sanu, then you could still have Harry kind of disappoint, even if Cam's doing awesome.
Yeah, so I wanted that aside on N'Keal Harry, because I'm not really backing off of him that hard. I think the price is still pretty appropriate. Like, I for example,
he does fall pretty late.
Yeah, like you can get N'Keal Harry in the 15th round, and there are seasons out there where, you know, he just shows up and he's good to go. He's fine. He's a great stylistic fit with Cam Newton, and he sees 130 targets and scores 8 times. And you just really want to have a lot of that. Because, like, for example, he goes next to Hunter Renfrow on Underdog. And, like, Renfrow is, like, kind of fine or whatever. But, I mean, come on.
Yeah, and I should say I was taking him ahead of ADP previously. So when I say I'm cooling off, I'm more – yeah. I'll take him when he's at that level for sure.
Yeah, I think that is I think that's sort of fine. Okay, get back to these rookie wide receivers. Mims falls in the same category of Justin Jefferson to me, where I'm not drafting him, but if I see it from him early on, I will be spending waiver wire money on him for sure, because I really like guys of Mims's physical profile, though his production profile at Baylor is like not what we're always looking for.
Yeah, I agree. And I don't want to invest in Darnold. So even as like a backdoor stacking.
Yes, agreed.
Yeah, he doesn't have much appeal, but I will spend waiver wire fab on him if he looks good right away. It's tough to evaluate him right now because he's been struggling with a hamstring issue. But obviously, if you want to talk about available targets, I mean, he's
so many
upside of any rookie wide receiver. But yeah, his production profile wasn't really there. He did have a pretty strong sophomore year, then a weak junior year, and then a pretty good senior year.
So that weak year is extra concerning because it happened when Jalen Hurt, like he got beat out by a grad transfer, basically, right? Jalen Hurd came in as a 22-year-old running back and took away all the market share from him. And he was an NFL player. Like, I think Jalen Hurd is an NFL player, but he wasn't, like, it's not like a first-round pick situation like Justin Jefferson right. And Jamar Chase or something.
Yeah, it'd be really helpful if we knew how good Hurd was. It really a shame that we,
yeah, know, what a bummer.
He's injured, yeah.
Yeah, but I do really like Jalen Hurd. Okay, this is a guy I feel like I should like, but I think I have literally only taken T. Higgins in drafts where I've had to backdoor stack Joe Burrow because my other stacks got knocked out. Where are you at on T. Higgins?
I've been making more of an effort to get him involved in that best ball flyer range. I mean, just looking at my exposures, I'm like, I have a lot of Andy Isabella and Miles Boykin, which I feel fine
like
about.
Like literally every draft though, like it's time to start opening it up a little bit.
Exactly. And so when I look at the other guys I can mix in, Higgins definitely jumps out. Underclassman wide receiver, almost a first round pick. I mean, first pick of the second round. And in a situation where you could see Burrow being good right away, you've got, it's like a mash unit right now in Cincinnati. All of these guys have been injured. John Ross was away from the field with COVID. You've got Green hasn't really been practicing. Higgins himself has been dealing with a hamstring. So it's really been like Boyd and then Mike Thomas and Auden Tate right now.
Seen a lot of Thomas chat. People seem to like this guy from draft Twitter.
Yeah, he seems to be doing pretty good so far. But I think if Higgins is any good, he should be able to displace him quickly. So
yeah.
I like that Higgins actually has probably some sneaky target upside. And then, if any of these guys aren't healthy, I think the contingent value is very, very strong for him. And then I also think he looks to probably be operating with some deep down field to some extent. Obviously, Ross is kind of the classic deep threat, but I think Boyd will be operating underneath, and Higgins was very efficient in college. He's not super fast, but he's a bit of a bigger body.
No,
I think.
He's slow. He is the opposite. He is a big, slow guy.
He's like 4'5". He's not super slow. I guess we don't.
I remember it being worse than that.
Yeah, he underperformed at the combine, but I think he did better at the pro day, if I recall. Anyway.
Yeah, the pro days are four five nine at 216 is slow. That's like 30th percentile.
Yeah, right. He's not like a burner at all, but he did kind of operate deeper downfield in college. So,
in college, yeah.
Yeah. We'll see. We'll see if it translates. But if it does, then I think he could have some spike weeks. So he's someone I've been trying to mix in. And as you mentioned, a really nice backdoor stacking option, because if you find yourself like getting sniped at quarterback,
those underdog go drafts, with Ross. Man.
Yeah. Yeah. You get sniped there. So go
yeah,
Ross.
People are sharp. Higgins.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Let's see who else do we have here? Yeah. So Judy is the guy who I have the hardest time with because I was lower on him as a prospect kind of than the market anyway. Then he goes to a situation where, like, it could be great where they're all in on Drew Lock and they are, just throwing the ball all the time and doing all of this, really opening up the offense and everything. Or they could just be, Melvin Gordon, Phillip Lindsay, ground and pound. And I don't know. I find myself literally only taking Judy in, like, when I take Sutton and when I want to set up like a big Bronco stack, and that's really the only time.
The tough part about Judy is that he's going right next to Fant. So you kind of have to
prefer Fant for sure.
Yeah, I prefer Fant. So if I want to set up that Bronco stack you described, he's not even always included in it. Yes. It's tough. And I think, my highest owned player right now on underdog is Courtland Sutton. His ADP is just so hard to get away from. Yeah, it's so hard. I mean, you can get him in the early sixth sometimes, any point in the fifth, no matter where you're picking, you can pretty much lock up Sutton. It's awesome. So I just keep drafting Sutton. The reports out of camp there is that he's the clear alpha. He has this awesome connection with Locke, which is great to hear because he didn't really show that last season. He had a much better connection with Flacco. There's definitely some downside risk here with Sutton. But his ADP, like I said, just makes it really hard for me to get away from him. And I don't always want to be doing like these big stacks with Locke because I don't know that Locke strikes me as a guy who can support a bunch of weapons.
All those guys, yeah.
Yeah, I'm mostly hoping that he can support Sutton as the alpha. If that's my thesis, then it also kind of keeps me off of Judy a little bit. So I have a hard time drafting Judy this year. I think in Dynasty, it's definitely, he looks like he's having a strong camp. I wouldn't really knock him down at all in that sense, but yeah, I as of right now, it's tough for me to fit him on my teams in redraft.
So I do agree with that. I'm like a little bit lower on him than Dynasty, but I mean, I think he seems like mostly fine. He does, however, though, he might have the best contingent value of anyone other than Lamb, because if Sutton were to miss time, we would expect Judy to like immediately pretty much inherit like an 8 or 9 target per game role, I would think.
And KJ Hamler has been struggling with the hamstring issue as well, and obviously doesn't really profile as a target hog, even if Sutton were to go down. So I think you're right. I think Judy would probably – he would at least have the upside to jump in as a clear alpha if Sutton were to be out for some time.
Yeah. All right, Ruggs. I mean, Ruggs is another guy who I actually think Ruggs and Rager are kind of profile similarly year one, where if – like well, we already know it seems that Rager is going to be a good NFL player. It seems like his coaches are in. Seems like Wentz is in. Seems like everyone just kind of buys that Rager is ready to go. I don't actually – I've not seen much on Ruggs, like his teammates being like, oh, you know, he seems like the real deal. Like I've heard less buzz on Ruggs. That doesn't mean it's not out there. It just means that I haven't really heard it yet. Have you been deep in The Athletic on Ruggs yet?
What I've seen is that it seems like a little bit inconsistent. I've seen some negative stuff where, you know, he's kind of running – not like the crazy wrong route, but just like not executing his route properly, kind of running more of like a go route than a fade route and leading to an interception. I've seen a lot of hype for Bryan Edwards and Carr talking about how excited he is for Edwards.
Yeah, so that's tilting me.
Good. Yeah. So I'm a little bit less interested in Ruggs. The other thing is that I don't really want Carr's deep threat. That's been kind of the problem, my problem with Ruggs the whole time. And now, you know, you're looking at these best ball drafts. It's like, yeah, Ruggs does profile as a guy that could have spike weeks. But again, you're tied to Derek Carr. Marcus Mariota has looked absolutely terrible. And I don't think he really poses a threat to Carr's job. Not that Mariota really would help you with the deep threat issue anyway. But it's probably going to be Carr all season. And I don't know that his connection with Ruggs is going to ultimately end up being that strong this year. So he's a guy that I have sprinkled in. I don't think it'd be wise to do a complete fade on Ruggs just because of how explosive of a player he is. And given the draft capital, they're going to have a big incentive to make sure he's involved year one. So I'd say as long as he's healthy, he's going to have a pretty substantial role, but he's not that cheap. So it's more like
when he falls. No, on Underdog, he's expensive.
Yeah, yeah.
These rookie wide receivers, it's very interesting. Like Underdog is very sharp, right? And so that ADP gets updated every day. But on some of these other best ball sites, and like it just, I've noticed that these rookie wide receivers have some of the widest deltas in where they are selected, just based on which site they are being taken, in a way that I have not really noticed that often before. Sad news for Brandon Ayuk. Seems like he got banged up in practice. You know, any missed practice time for a rookie is going to be a big deal. Not sure if it's going to cause him to miss time during the regular season or anything, but it's definitely not a good sign for him to be missing this time.
It's not great. Another hamstring. It's definitely hamstring season.
Yeah.
But Ayuk, it doesn't concern me quite as much because they just are so desperate for wide receivers, and he was there long enough and kind of by himself with, you know, Debo out for this period, that I think he probably made his case for having a pretty substantial role this season. And as long as the hamstring injury doesn't keep him out, you know, multiple weeks into the regular season, then I think we could see a big role for him week one. And he strikes me maybe as like, you know, the Odell Beckham rookie year, yes, where we all faded him because of a training camp injury, and then he hits the ground running and they knew what they had. I think that could be, obviously, you know, I'm not saying he's going to have a historic rookie season, but I think it could be a thing where they know what they have in Ayuk. He was having an awesome camp. Now they have to let him get healthy. I think it's a smart organization that is going to let him get healthy. Hopefully when he comes back, he's not going to re-injure that hamstring. He's going to be fully healed. And I think he could just hit the ground running.
Yeah, I think that's pretty likely to be the case. I mean, Ayuk is still a guy I'm drafting. Also, because the best ball math is really just that you really want to get Kelce, Kittle, Ertz, or Andrews. I end up taking Kittle a lot of the time, and the way it works out is it's such a nice stack to you take Kittle, you don't worry about quarterback for 10 rounds, you take Jimmy G, and then you can take Ayuk, and then also there is Kendrick Bourne and Trent Taylor back there in like pretty much the last picks of your draft. Do you have a preference between Bourne or Taylor?
I prefer Bourne. Evan Silva's been more on him, but I don't know. To be honest, I haven't really been aggressively targeting Bourne or Taylor, Bourne more so, but I guess I kind of probably should be, huh? I mean, there's who else are they going to throw to, right?
Well, except, the thing is this is kind of like do you remember Trey Quinn last year? It's like kind of that same thing where like at the very last pick of your draft, you're like, oh yeah, just chalk this guy up for 90 targets. There's nothing that can get in the way. And what you find out is when you sign up for guys like that, just better players are found. You will just find better, like there are street free agents that are probably more talented than Trent Taylor. You know what I mean? And so like, I think that Bourne and Taylor are both fine picks in like the last round of your draft or whatever, but I'm not making them like priority targets. Whereas like the case with Isabella and Boykin is, those guys, if they work, are going to be like actual studs.
Yeah, no, I think that's a good point. Both those guys have traits where you could see them being stars and really important year two breakouts, where I don't really see that with Bourne or Taylor.
Yeah. There's almost no chance. So that's some thought on the rookie wide receivers and kind of what we are planning on doing with them.
And we're drafting Chenault everywhere still.
Oh yeah. It didn't even talk about Chenault, but obviously, so the guys that I take, with considerable frequency are Rager. I really like that. It actually, in a weird way, I like when the wide receiver goes before the quarterback in the stack. So I like to be able to go, Rager round 9, Wentz round 10, lock it up. And you can take Deshaun Jackson later. You can take Arcega Whiteside with the last selection of your best ball draft. Boston Scott. Yeah. I think that is another stack that definitely makes sense. And then Ayuk, I think, makes sense. The mega backdoor stack with Minshew and Chenault, and then you can even take DD Westbrook or Chris Conley if you want. And then Lamb. I mean, Lamb is pretty much every draft I'm trying to get one Cowboys wide receiver, or including Blake Jarwin. I know you and Pete don't like Blake Jarwin as much.
No, I like Blake Jarwin okay.
Yeah. I'm more with Gretch on that one. I think there is a big role out there for Blake Jarwin.
Yeah, and I like your idea of just trying to get a piece of this Cowboys offense. I think that's sharp. I've been already thinking that I need to get more Lamb, and after talking with you, I'm definitely going to make a bit more of a priority to get Lamb onto teams. Gallup has been the guy that I've been targeting most heavily.
He's going in like the fifth round now sometimes.
Yeah. He's getting a little bit more expensive.
It's one of those situations where everyone on Twitter tweeted for 3 months about how the gap was too wide in ADP. And now Cooper has fallen like two spots at wide receiver and Gallup has moved up like 15. We're like, great. Everyone, you priced it out. Like, you got the market to where it needed to be. Good job. Thank you.
Yeah. Although Cooper probably should have fallen a little more than two spots, but it's just funny that it's like, it only works one way. You can kind of tweet about it, the gap, and the gap closes because we'll just get super hyped on the guy who's going second. There's not going to be a discount on Cooper, which I would have liked to see,
Yeah. I mean, being able, like, I've been able to get Amari Cooper like late third a couple of times, and like that feels good. Yeah. Like that definitely seems like a pretty appropriate price. But the other thing I wanted to talk about today was early waiver wire strategy. Yeah. And I mean, obviously this stuff applies to, 12 team home leagues and everything too, but kind of more importantly for the FFPC and the NFC, these high stakes leagues. One of the things I've been thinking is you know, there is going to be a running back injury that opens up the first 2 weeks of the season. You know, last year it was Tevin Coleman sprained his ankle. He was out for 4 weeks. Raheem Mostert was going for like 250 to 350 waiver wire dollars out of 1,000. And there was also Terry McLaurin and in some leagues, DJ Shark, not that many, but that were all out there for big week one waiver wire bids. And my thinking is those week one waiver dollars. So on one hand, I'm thinking, you know, this is going to be a year where you're going to be wanting to make, you know, $25, $50 bids in week 10, you know, because there's going to be more guys opening up. But also, we've had no preseason games. We really only have kind of, you know, coach speak, right? Beat writer reports to go on for how these guys are doing. And we're going to learn things about what these teams are doing week one that we have no hint or clue of right now. So I'm finding it to be a difficult balance of like my fab plan, basically.
Yeah, my initial thought is that it's probably going to be similar to the way we want to approach the zero running back targets. So when we're looking at the backfields where we want to invest, we want to prioritize ambiguous situations over contingent value. This is something J.J. Zacharyson had a good article on this this year and fits with a lot of the research on where these league-winning type of zero running back guys come from. And I think that, to your point of not having preseason, we're never going to have a more ambiguous week one than this week. So we're going to learn more from this week one probably than ever before. So with that in mind, then I think you're probably better off spending more of your fab budget than you may have in previous years after week one, because that's how you're going to take advantage of what we've learned, you know, with some of that ambiguity disappearing. Obviously it's gonna be very noisy as it always is, but I think we'll learn more than usual. When you save the fab, that's more betting on the contingent value. You're waiting for kind of injuries and stuff, and you know, you know, obviously week two, week three, we're still learning about roles, but once you get further into the season, you're really just kind of saving that money for a big injury to open something up. So, you know, I think I've been thinking already, like, I should probably be spending more of my money in the beginning of the season anyway. Sean Siegel is a big – I don't know if he's a proponent of that or if he just can't help himself. If you ask him, it sounds like he just can't help but be too optimistic in the early weeks of the season. But he tends to spend a lot of his fab early on, he says. And
Year, it would have been a good strategy with McLaurin, Shark, and Mostert, though you probably would have re-dropped Mostert and picked him back up once Tevin Coleman came back in. But even more so, last year there were so many poison apples, right? We had Ty Johnson, we had Brian Hill, you know, we had Jalen Richard when it ended up being DeAndre Washington. That was the better pickup. Like, there were a lot of guys who went for significant fab who like were like actually terrible for your fantasy teams.
Yeah, it's a good point. And then, like, you know, guys like Tyler Higbee were not like super popular pickups. I mean, they were picked up in FFPC and stuff, but you weren't tending to be blowing your budget for him. And obviously he was a league winner. So it did end up being kind of tough to identify the correct injury guys later on, as you say, like DeAndre Washington being a great example too. So yeah, I think that I'm probably going to spend a lot of fab after week one and two, and probably, you know, more after week one than I ever have.
Yeah. My thought is that probably there will be, you know, two wide receivers who are playing a way bigger role than we expect. And you know, It is definitely hamstring season, so, you know, who knows really all the things that can happen with injuries and stuff from now until the start of the year. One thing I've been thinking is, what happens if DeMarcus Robinson is on the field for like 90% of the snaps in that Thursday night game and has like a sick game, like six catches, 88 yards, and two touchdowns, especially in the FFPC format where you can spend waiver wire money on that guy and have his score count.
Yeah, that he'll be huge. That's a good point. I really hope that doesn't happen, because you know it's just going to be the Sammy Watkins thing all over again, where he just disappears for the rest of the year. And Robinson himself, of course, had that monster week last year and didn't do anything. I think he's probably not a guy where I would
but it's it's whack-a-mole with those secondary Houston Texans players that's on Thursday night that is actually interesting. So Stills, Cobb, Fells, Thomas, Akins, they have all the – Cahill Waring. Like, I could see a random Texans player playing a ton, having a big game, going for loads of fab, or going for, like, an eighth-round pick in FFPC drafts that happen, you know, that Friday before the start of the season. They do main event drafts then. And I could see it just, you know, obviously being a terrible investment, but just having a huge game in that game against Kansas City.
Yeah, they have this small school rookie prospect named Isaiah Coulter who would be pretty interesting if he has a role right away. He would be someone I'd be interested in picking up if he has a big game. But, to your point, I mean, that's an ambiguous situation. You could even see, like, a big role for Stills, right? So that would be...
Or what if Duke Johnson and David Johnson are both just receiving backs and Buddy Howell or Caron Higdon or Scotty Phillips has 15 carries?
Yeah, there you go. That would be a huge win.
We're talking about like stuff that sounds made up, but like that could happen.
Yeah, and think about how much your opinions typically change over the course of preseason if you're grinding this stuff. Like, you know,
a lot.
A lot. What we think before the first preseason game to after the third, it's a big shift. Well, we don't get that this year. So I think a lot of that's going to happen all at once on week one. It's going to be a mad rush to the waivers.
Yeah. So there we go. Do you want to talk about the conclusions from your tight end article on establishtherun.com?
Yeah, sure. I have two articles out so far right now with actual like targets and fades that I'm looking at. But the original article, the first article I put up was talking about like what we want to be looking for when you're looking at the PFF yards per route run data and just some interesting findings looking at elite tight end season. So basically you want guys who are getting targets at a high rate per route so they can, and I think that's to some extent a skill. I think it's to some extent like a role within the offense. Kind of a combination of that, but you want guys who are getting targets on a really high percentage of their routes, but then you also want guys who are efficient as well, because while that efficiency, you know, with every player is not going to be super consistent year to year, I do think that efficiency is something to pay attention to, especially with a position like tight end where the guy's almost trying to prove that he can be a pass catcher. And we see that with young players, efficiency can help predict increases in opportunity. That's at running back, wide receiver, and tight end. So sort of a thing where it's like, if a guy, you're like, is this guy even good at catching? The fact that he was efficient shows you that, you know, the team may make him more of a receiver going forward. So those were the two things I was looking at, yards per target, targets per route run. And the guy that really jumped out, Davis, as a fade was your boy Mike Gesicki. So that's because he was not targeted on a high percentage of his routes, also not efficient, and that's for both years of his career. He runs a ton of routes, which is good. We obviously want guys to run a ton of routes. Like, that's how you...
Yeah, I have a pushback for you.
Go ahead.
So I was talking with Gretch the other day on this podcast, and he was kind of talking about the targets per route run stuff, and my pushback is this is just penalizing Gesicki for his team wanting him to be on the field all the time, because obviously every route you run where you're not targeted, you're penalized a little bit more. And Gesicki is playing like 80% of the team snaps and running loads of routes. So I would expect his targets per route run to be lower than someone like, TJ Hawkinson or whatever, who is not playing as many snaps and not out there as often.
Yeah, fair enough. I guess the problem that I see with it is that he was running like a super high percent, 70 plus percentage of his snaps out of the slot. And so you would expect those to be like pretty high. Like a lot of guys who run out of the slot are targeted on a very high
targeted a ton
targets. Yeah, because that's like a great place to earn targets. So if you're running out of the slot and all you have is Devontae Parker, you know, for the second half of the season to compete with for targets, really. And you still can't earn targets. Like, they have set you up to earn targets. You're still not earning the targets. Like, what is going on? So I think there is a concern that this guy is just not very good at earning targets. I mean, he was not good at earning targets as a rookie, and actually he was playing more in line in that season, and then he's moved to the slot, still not earning targets at a high rate. I do think that this year he'll probably be playing out of the slot a ton. Again, he's basically a slot wide receiver. If the Dolphins end up passing just like a ton, you know, you could see him doing just fine. I think the thing with Gesicki to me is that I'm not actually – like if I owned Gesicki, I wouldn't be that worried about him just completely bombing. But where he's going, particularly in the tight end premium ADP, you need him to hit a ceiling that I just don't think he has.
You would just be worried that you are losing – you're giving up a bunch of ceiling to Hockenson, to Fant, even to Blake Jarwin, honestly. Like you could tell me Blake Jarwin scores like 10 touchdowns or something, and I'd be like, yeah, that probably can happen without anything really outrageous going on. I think the thing maybe this is like playing for the friendliest loss type stuff that we talk about with people who refuse to draft zero RB, but can't you see Gesicki just like literally just playing like 90% of the snaps every single week and getting like at least 6 targets for like 8 weeks straight or something, like just being like kind of like actually being like a like young Jason Witten style? Like I can actually see that happening pretty easily because he's gonna have to play so much.
Yeah, and I in the article I like tried to make the case for Gesicki as this is a player that I'm basically universally fading, so my case isn't going to be super strong for him, but the case I was making is like now that they've lost Allen Hurns, they've lost Albert Wilson.
Yeah.
Maybe there's some more of those targets to go to him underneath. They get Preston Williams back. Devontae Parker, if he keeps playing at a high level, maybe the defensive attention is focused on those two guys and he's just feasting underneath. And if he's running that many routes out of the slot, I think, you know, you could see him getting to a ceiling that way. I also mentioned that Chan Gailey, who, you know, I listened when you had Mike Clay on your pod, he mentioned Chan Gailey as a potential bearish addition, you know, as the offensive coordinator. But actually, Gailey has had two tight ends in the past run even more, a higher percentage of their snaps out of the slot than Gesicki did last year. And so I think that Gailey could actually just come in and say, cool, this guy's my slot receiver. I'll just leave him in the slot. And now with, you know, those opt-outs, there really isn't any other competition for that role. So that, I think, is the bullish case, that he's just running even higher percentage of his snaps from the, or his routes from the slot this year than he was last year when he led all tight ends, and he's just like feasting underneath targets. But, you know, I mentioned his ADP, he is going in these FFPC tight end premium drafts. It looks like he's fallen a little bit. Now he's gone the last 2 days at the 801, but he's as high as the 603, doesn't tend to fall past like the early ninth, and you're just giving up a lot of opportunity costs to take this dude. I mean, Christian Kirk, CD
pretty
Lamb.
Expensive. Yeah, I don't even think I can really advocate for him at his current FFPC ADP. He's more of like an underdog drafters, DraftKings, like best ball tight, because you can get him in like the 11th round in those formats.
Yeah, and I think that at that price, it's okay. I don't tend to have him in underdog either, partly because, like I said, I'm fading him. But also in underdog, I agree with you that you want to be going after Kittle, Kelsey, or Andrews to start. And then I also love Hockenson. I really like Fant.
Yeah.
I'm into Higbee much more so than – I may be a Rube on Higbee. I don't know, because all the other
– I take Higbee sometimes, especially because I like the – Higbee, Goff, Josh Reynolds stack. So a big thing that keeps me from taking Gesicki a ton is he is like kind of unstackable in the sense that I know that you could just take one of Fitzpatrick or Tua, but those feel like such low percentage options. Like you feel like such a high percentage of the time, the quarterback that starts the year is not going to be the quarterback playing in the, you know, the underdog fantasy playoffs or whatever. So I think he's a much harder ask there. On DraftKings, where you have the 20 roster spots and you can feel more comfortable taking Tua and Fitzpatrick, I think he's a little bit more viable.
That makes sense. Yeah.
So that's Gesicki.
Yeah. So there's, I guess I should say, Hockenson jumped out as in the second article as a target. I mean, he just, and I think a sneaky target because he saw his efficiency crater without Stafford. And like I said, you do want to see these guys be efficient, not because it says necessarily who they are as players, but I think it gives you a good indication of how big their role the following season may end up being. But Hockenson was really good with Stafford, and he had a big role in the offense all season. So I think that's what matters. They're going to be evaluating this dude, you would imagine, based on his play with Stafford, given that the whole offense sucked without Stafford and Stafford's now healthy. So you get Hockenson back this season, where people, I think, are probably sleeping a little bit on how good of a rookie season he had. Obviously a fantastic prospect. Just 26% market share of yards playing alongside Fant, eighth overall pick. I mean, I'm really excited for him. He's looked awesome in camp. He's a dude that I'm loading up on and like 100% won over Gesicki. I want him over Gesicki. And he's going over the last couple of days of like a full round later than Mike Gesicki in FFPC.
Well, he's going later because of this news about his foot.
Yeah, although the news about the foot, I think, has been misinterpreted to some degree because he said he's got like – it's sort of a mental issue where he's still kind of overcoming it, feeling – getting back to where he feels like fully confident, you know, with the ankle. But all the reports that I've been reading is that he looks amazing. And he did it at one point clarify, no, I am 100% from like a physical standpoint. It's like a mental hurdle. So I don't think he's nursing this ankle injury heading into the season. And if you're getting a discount on that, take it.
The last thing I want to cover is just this hilarious Kerryon Johnson quote, where he tells the Detroit, I don't remember which media member reported this, but he tells some member of the Detroit media, I can't learn anything from DeAndre Swift because my knees and hips don't work like that anymore. Like basically just being like, I at 22 years old, I'm already an old man and DeAndre Swift is already like further advanced for me than I could ever be.
See, I read it a little differently. Not that I think he was saying he could never move like that. That basically my hips, my hips have never done that. Yeah,
yeah.
That this dude's like a freak. Yeah, that's how I took it. But either way, I mean, he's just admitted that DeAndre Swift's the better. He says when DeAndre Swift makes one of these crazy plays, he's like, I can't learn anything from it, so I just say, good job.
Good job. Oh, that's so funny. Yeah. And to be fair, the Tim 21, who is like the long time beat writer for the Detroit Lions, says that the split is expected. There is going to be a running back by committee, but Swift is the 1A, so for whatever that means.
Yeah, the big question on season is going to be if Kerryon gets the goal line work.
Goal line work.
If he does, then I think he's viable where he's going. And I've sometimes taken him with like more like true zero running back constructions than underdog, where I literally just need some touches with a chance of goal line carries, but he's not someone that I'm loading up on even at a pretty steep discount right now.
Yeah. All right. Anyone else we want to tout? I think we're drafting together on Sunday night in the ship chasing listeners league. That'll be fun.
Yeah. Very excited to see where our favorite targets go in that league. I think you can expect LaVisca Chenault to have his highest draft selection of the season in any format. So we'll be excitedly watching that and where Ronald Jones gets selected. I mean, I guess I should tout Ronald Jones. It's sort of like I'm required to do that, right? So Jones, man, last year, people were taking victory laps. Yesterday, people were taking victory laps on Ronald Jones because he dropped like three passes in training camp. And, you know, people are psyched about Leonard Fournette, even though he spent an entire year stepping on his dick. And Ronald Jones drops three passes, and it's like he's dead. Well, today, the beat reporters have been saying he's been having an awesome practice, and they're still not seeing anything out of Keyshawn Vaughn. So don't leave Ronald Jones for dead just because he dropped three passes yesterday. And I did see the videos. They were pretty egregious drops. But he's not dropping passes today, so keep drafting him with confidence.
Rich Rebar said to me yesterday that Ronald Jones is just Raheem Mostert East Coast. How does that make you feel?
Well, you know, Raheem Mostert was like amazing in the playoffs. So I guess, is he saying he's going to have this unexpected breakout and win people their leagues, or is that not what he meant?
Well, I think we're all universally kind of fading Mostert.
No,
so
I am
you,
too.
You
am
take too. From that.
I know what he means, what but you I don't like it.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you know, at least Ronald Jones will be targeted on early downs. That's what we're hanging our hat on.
That is what we're hanging our hat on. And that there's no one right now that profiles to get the goal line work other than Jones. It's not maybe, you know, I think in a worst case scenario, they kind of unexpectedly mix in McCoy there and Dare stays in if he was on the field for hurry up situations, which is something that happened last year where they just left him in at the goal line when they were already in 2 minute drill type of situations. If that happens and then Keyshawn comes on late, then it could be, that's like your bear case for Jones, is that he never really has that role locked up. And then Keyshawn kind of takes over the offense, you know, for the stretch run of the season. But that's, I think, takes like a very specific confluence of events where Jones looks very clearly to, at a minimum, he's going to see early down passing attempts and he's going to see the goal line work to start.
Well, you know,
the whole season.
Dare is just really busy with his work captaining special teams.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Dare, I think, may not have made the team, but TJ Logan was injured, and now I think they kind of have to have Dare involved. And Raymond Calais is a guy they took in the 7th round who I don't think projected to make the team, but now probably does. So if you want to bet against Ronald Jones and you like explosive backs, then I would say he's probably your really only bet. Obviously, yeah, I guess outside of Vaughn, but like you don't want to be taking McCoy. You don't want to be taking Dare.
All right, I got breaking news from Patriots training camp. Mike Reese and Keel Harry shows up twice today in the red zone with Cam Newton delivering both ones. The first was a fade in which he outmuscled J.C. Jackson. The second was a slant where he won off the line. Harry was also physical in a run blocking drill. There we go.
All right, I love it.
That's what we needed, Pat.
I'm back in.
We're back in. just when I thought I was out, I'm back in. Everyone follow Pat on Twitter at Pat Corain. Read his work on Establishing the Run. Listen to the Ship Chasing podcast, and we will be back later this week.
Build digital-first customer relationships with Salesforce Digital 360. Connect every marketing, commerce, and digital experience on a single platform. Innovate fast with easy-to-launch sites, campaigns, and apps. That's more relationships, more revenue, more return, and more success. Salesforce Digital 360. Hear from our customers at sfdc.co/digital360.
Hey, wake up. New drinks just dropped at Wendy's. Cold foam, cold brew coffee, and sparkling energy. Both the caramel and the chocolate cold foam are just, so good. And the pineapple citrus and cherry limeade sparkling energy each have
80 to 120 milligrams
of added caffeine. So whether you need a treat first thing or to just stop yawning already, mornings hit different. To pick up a new pick-me-up, gotta be Wendy's. At participating U.S. Wendy's,